Welcome to Building Great Leaders with Dr. Les Olala.
If you ignore the one thing to do the many things, then anything will bother you. But if you take care of the one thing, you'll be able to do many things and not much will bother you.
On today's program, Dr. Olala focuses our attention on what the scripture says about directing your time. This message was recorded at a chapel service in 2001. Building Great Leaders provides instruction, encouragement, and resources for Christian leaders. You can learn more at bgleaders.org, bgleaders.org. Our speaker, Dr. Les Olala, is the founder and director of Building Great Leaders and has been serving the Lord in full-time ministry for 50 years as a pastor, Bible college president, and evangelist. And now, directing your time.
An interesting story, which I will not get into in detail, in 2 Kings chapter 4, and it's the story of the Shunammite, the woman. They pleaded for a child. God gave them a child, and as the child worked in the field with the father, the child died. Mother went to where she knew there was an answer. She carried the child to the man of God. And it was quite a testimony where she said, "I perceive this as a holy man of God who passes by us continually." They made him a chamber. That's where the term prophet chamber came from. And she took the child and went to the man of God. Gehazi met her and said, "Is it well with thee?" It's a good question. That's what you are as a person with God. Is it well with thy husband, what you are as a person with your mate? Is it well with thy child as a parent? Because those are probably the three main concerns in life. Is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband or mate? Is it well with thy child? Those are the three big questions in life. But question one, is it well with thee? She said it is well. She was not honest. A lot of people are surface with people they don't trust. You'll often find people are surface in a relationship with you. If they don't really trust you, they're not going to bear their heart to someone they don't trust. There's a good reason why that woman didn't trust Gehazi. I think he was a self-motivated. I think he was a self-builder. He never did pay the price that Elisha paid to be used of God. He was an opportunist. And we find in this next chapter, we find how Gehazi deceived for personal gain. And that woman must have had enough discernment to pick up something about him that she didn't like. So she said, I don't need to tell him anything. I'm going to where I can find an answer. She came to the man of God. And there are five principles that Elisha applied that I think are principles that bring life where there is death, whether it's death in a relationship, whether it is death in a husband-wife relationship, or whether there's death in a parent-child relationship. There is a production of life where there was once death. And number one priority I call proximity. And I'm not going into the chapter here for the sake of time, but proximity. It says Elisha went in. This is after he sent the servant, but took the staff and laid the staff on the head of the child, and the child, there was neither voice nor hearing. And it says he went in proximity. He went where the problem was. And that's always the first thing that has to be done. Go where the problem is. Don't ignore the problem. That's proximity. Now, that demands time. I want to address this problem of time. How are we directing energies? The idea of time, how you are directing your time. So it says, he went in. That is the idea of proximity. If you're going to ever solve anything, you have to go where that problem is happening. We find that ultimately pictured in Christ, God taking on flesh. That's proximity. He became man. For what reason? To solve the sin problem. in our lives. If you have a communication problem, go to where the problem is. Go to that mate, go to that child, but whatever you do, don't just turn off. One sleep on the couch and one sleep in the bedroom. Say, I'm going to solve the problem. I'm going to get out of her sight. That's not the solution. You may be the problem, but sleeping on the couch is not the solution. Go where the problem is. You sense there's a difficulty with a child, go where the problem is. Proximity. Get close. That demands proper timing. Secondly, he shut the door. That's privacy. You know what? Most of us are in too much of a hurry to ever deal privately with the matter. One of the biggest causes of bitterness and discipline is the fact that we do it on the run. And we don't get private. We don't get close to the situation, and we certainly don't get private where there is time that has to be dealt with, where you can ask the proper questions and so on. So he shut the door. He went in privately. And there are some things you just are going to have to address privately. Thirdly, he prayed, which is a whole other factor. And then it says he lay himself upon the child. That's the principle of price, paying a price, giving yourself totally. You will never solve a problem if you just partially give yourself to it. You must be willing to pay a price to sacrifice your own will, your own desires, your own values. You sacrifice everything else in order that you might see that problem settled. You know what most people say? I'd like to get this thing settled my way. I'd like to get it settled if I don't have to say I'm wrong. Sure, do you want the problem solved? Well, of course I do. What price are you willing to pay? None. You know what? That tells me you've gotten that way all your life. But you have, there was no price tag connected with it. Pay price tag. How much are you willing to personally sacrifice? And then he never gave up. He persevered. I think those are principles in dealing to bring in life where there is death. In a relationship, bring in life where there is death. In communication, bring in life where there is death. Proximity, privacy, prayer, price tag, and perseverance. Going on, constantly going on. So how then do we direct our energies in these areas? Let's turn to Psalm 90. And we will see what Moses says regarding time. I have often taken a yardstick and had it pre-cut in 6-inch segments, and each half of a foot represented 12 years of life, or every inch represented two years of life. So a 36-inch ruler would then measure 72 years of life. And I'd had it pre-cut in 6-inch segments, and I would walk up there with this ruler, and then I would snap off 6 inches. That would be childhood, the first 12 years of life, gone. And then as I would be preaching, I would break off another 6 inches. So now I was into 24 years. I was into my mid-20s. But the yardstick is only 1/3 as long as it was originally. Then I'd speak some more, and I'd break off another 6 inches. And then I was left with only half of what I started with originally. But by now, I'm in at 36. You say, 36. I mean, I have a lot of life left. Then I talk, and then I break another 6 inches off. And I'm now up to 48. But I only have that much left. And then I'd break off another 6, and I was left with just that much, 60. And I would say, are some of you getting scared? Because some where I preach are already off the end of the ruler. But you know what? If you ask them, how quickly did time go? So just like that. Hard for me to conceive. I went back to a grade school reunion. Hard for me to conceive of being in grade school in the 40s. I went to visit a man who was dying. My daughter Tammy and I went up to witness to this man who was dying. And I said, you know, Connie, isn't it amazing how quickly, I said, we look back at 40 years and doesn't it seem like yesterday? He said, yeah, back then, he said, I thought this time would never come. He said, no, I could go at any minute. And he did. Very shortly after we left, he passed away. You look back at your life, you say, it went so quickly. When you're in your 20s, you think, everything will go on always as it is. There will never be any changes. But there will be changes. Realize one day you are going to get old. Realize one day the things that you lived for, you will have. Had a man up here visiting with me. I knew him well in years gone by. Has owned 3 businesses. He said, I had a drive in me to prove that I could do something that somebody else couldn't do. He said, for example, everybody else went to college. He said, I went a semester or two semesters. He said, I was going to go out and prove to all of the friends who went to college I could exceed what they did and let them go on with their college education. So I got everything wanted. He said, had 2 Cadillacs and he got tired of a Cadillac. Then he bought a new Mercedes and then he's thinking maybe he'll get rid of that Mercedes, get $500,000 in savings. And he said, you know what? He said, when he was with me, he got a call. They called a bid on a $1 million contract, which he said he's almost positive to get. Found out it was later. It was a smaller than that. But he said, I was walking around with him. He said, you know what it is? He said, it's a big zero. You know what? This guy is in his early 30s. He said, you know what really counts? You know how I'd like to live the rest of my life? Right here. He said, just doing this and... He said, you know why? Because he said, I've got everything I went after. And he said, it caused me to lose my family. He told me, he said, if this time of my life is supposed to be memories, he said, it is mighty sick. You know why? Because of a wrong investment of energies. But thank God there's grace. Thank God there's forgiveness. Thank God there's healing. Thank God it's never too late. And he wants to turn. But you know what he said he has to do now? He has to wrestle with all. Now he's got to go back to try to heal a broken relationship. Now he's got to go back and take turns with the kids. Now he has to go back. They're not divorced, but there is a separation. And it's always wrestling. Who's going to have the kids and who's going to do this? And there's the wife just bubbling and boiling. And then when he thinks everything's going to work out okay, they end up with like... cats and dogs. And you know, it really counts. He said, just serving people. That's what really counts. Now, Psalm 90, it says, verse 10, the days of our years are 70, and if by reason of strength they be 80, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. Who knoweth the power of thine anger? Even according to thy fear, so is thy wrath. So teach us to number our days that we might apply our hearts unto wisdom. Moses was saying here, God, just teach us to be wise regarding the amount of time you've given us to live, because we have X number of years in this life, and those years are going to be soon spent. They will be like a mist in the morning and they're soon gone. And I know how quickly time goes by. I know how quickly things go by. And I know when you're in your 20s and even the early 30s, you think, man, this life is just dragging on. Then you look back and say, how in the world could that many years have gone by since you graduated from college? And how could that many years have gone by since graduating from high school? And how could that much time go by since you had your children? How could all of these things be? Ephesians 5 says essentially the same thing. Redeeming the time because the days are evil. Buying up the time. There's a price tag for investing time properly because that time is Satan's time. You have to pay the price tag to get it back. That which God created to give you, Satan will take, and you have to pay a price to buy that back. Each person has so much time and emotional energy allotted in life. Many Christians are wearing out but are missing the mark and directing their energies and experiencing less than God's best. But I put a note here, full-time workers often find themselves worn out and frustrated because they lack clear direction and get overly committed. And I know what that's like. God has established priorities for us as to how to strengthen to be used. It is easy to miss God's plan and establish our own way, thus leaving important things undone. For example, most energy spent on minor priorities, leaving no energy left for things that build a godly life. But as you spend much time on minor items and you leave the major things undone. Case in point would be no study of God's word because you're too tired from work and recreation. You see, you mean work is a minor priority. It can be. Now, what I'm saying by work here is a lot of people find their God is work. See, well, no, I can't be in church because I have to work. Well, you have elected to work. But you can't violate the principle of making yourself a better person with God. Hobbies. Maybe you're taking too much energy on these hobbies. So, work. What is your devotional plan? What kind of a devotional plan do you have? For years I've used walk through the Bible, reading, I'll read to you. That's not the only thing to do because you need to do individual chapter studies and book studies. But I like to read through the Bible every year. I've liked that because it's kept me systematic in reading through the Bible. But you also have to have a record. Why record it? It's always helpful for me to jot down something that God taught me. Personal time with God. What about your prayer time? If you don't have a prayer list, I'm not sure how systematic you can stay in your prayer time. You say, well, I just feel kind of awkward. I like to sort of let the Spirit lead when I pray. Well, I've got to see a list when I pray. You say, well, shouldn't you be praying with your eyes closed? I think it's good sometimes. I think when you're in a crowd, it's good to close your eyes. But if I were to talk to you, a lot of times we get this idea, lock your eyes, and the harder you lock your eyes, the more sincere you are. God is there. Sometimes I think we close our eyes to do away, but I don't think it's unscriptural to actually have your eyes open and look at a list or even read praise chapters as a first phase of your prayer time. You may spend your first 20 minutes in prayer reading Psalms. You see, and then when you start jotting down things that God prompts you about, that's why I'm so sold on jotting notes down. God spoke to me about this in a message. I need to get the thing settled. And then I would never remember to pray for people if I didn't jot it down. When I get a letter and someone requests prayer, I have my secretary say, put that down, and I'm going to put that right into my prayer list. Things that have to go on the prayer list. Otherwise, you forget what you are as a person with God. Do you even have a devotional time? If you don't, you're losing a major force for wisdom in every other area of life. Then what you are as a partner with your mate. What kind of time are you spending in this mate-partner relationship? Or did you say, well, hobbies and work and TV, etc., these minor items are taking so much of my energy that I have so little time left for these. And I just put 80-20, not as a result of a survey, but just to illustrate the point. The 20 may be high. But if you have so much time and energy in life and you spend 80% of that time on minor items and you spend 20% of that time on major items, what is going to have the dominant control in your life? It will be the minor items that will have the dominant control in your lives. So you have to make a choice. Every day, choices have to be made of how time is going to be invested. Every day, time is given to you. A perfect comparison, I think, is a Mary and a Martha. Martha learned and became more usable, but Martha was in anxiety. Did Jesus rebuke Martha because she was working? I said, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things. You see, many things. But Mary had chosen that one thing. And you know, if you ignore the one thing to do the many things, then anything will bother you. But if you take care of the one thing, you'll be able to do many things and not much will bother you. Martha was always like this. Why? Because she was operating in the flesh. Mary was taking care of that one thing. Interesting, is it not, that when people decided to come to Christ, to whom did they come? They came to Mary to get questions answered. Why not Martha? Afraid to get their head bit off, probably. Appreciate what Dr. McLaughlin said. How can we preach a gospel of reconciliation to a world when we are irreconciled in the church? What time do you have for your mate? And then, what do you as a parent with the child? Training. Lord, train there. Lord, Hanuk. And it has a threefold application. One, Hanuk is the word to initiate. That is to set the taste. Then train has the implication to dedicate. 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 63, it's the word Hanuk used in the dedication of Solomon's temple. And the feast of dedication is Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah. That's that feast of dedication. And then it has to educate. That's where the formal training begin to come in. But along with this come discipline. What things are important in discipline? Number one, love. For whom the Father loveth. You have no basis for discipline if you don't love. That's Hebrews 12, 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Love then must be backed up by instruction. This is the way. God clearly instructed. Then, warning. And if not, then I will. And then number four is correction. Then number five is restoration. You know what? Proper discipline requires time. I have blown it so many times in prejudging a situation because I took no time and I said so many hurtful words before I knew the facts that it became a hindrance in any form of correction and certainly was a long restoration process. And boy, how quickly we jab in knives. And those things don't heal just because, oh, well, I'm sorry. You know, it takes a time of proper reacting. And you know where that goes back? It goes back to this situation, person with God, because as a right person with God, the fruit of the Spirit is manifest. Oh, boy, how devastating it is to discipline when there is an absence of the fruit of the Spirit in that. So make sure that there is a time. And then learn this principle to question rather than accuse. You know, because we as parents are given to panic. Why? Because we don't want things to go wrong. But oh, to keep from accusing before you question. The kids come home too late. It's easy to say, you knew what time you were supposed to be on. You purposely stayed up. Rather than saying, what time is it? 10:30? What time were you supposed to be home? 10? Is this new math or how did this work out exactly? But by this time, see, the conscience is quickened, but the minute you start accusing, the will just hardens. And a lot of times the accusations are based on our fears, not on fact. And by the time we accuse based on fear, and by the time we find out the fact, it's too late to address the conscience because the will is already so hardened that it's going to take a process of time for that to work out. So what you are as a parent with a child. And by the way, this is the progression of God's discipline. He loves me perfectly. He instructed me thoroughly. He warned me thoroughly. And he said, I will correct, but I also will restore. If we confess our sin, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sin and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness without holding that against. And then what we are, a person with people. See, this has to do with our character. This has to do with our reputation. And you know what we do sometimes? Because of our busyness and our demands, we spend all of our time guarding our reputation with people while we're letting these other priorities slip. Well, what if you have so much to do? I put some little guidelines here. List every role that you're doing. Everything you're doing. You're a husband, you're a teacher, you're a Sunday school teacher, you're a deacon, you're a father, you're a friend, you're a fisherman, you're a hunter, you list everything you're doing. Then what roles can be eliminated? What are you doing that doesn't have to be done? Then what roles can be delegated? You can transfer this list down here. This also is, you cannot delegate being a parent. You cannot delegate being a husband. But you could delegate picking up materials. You could delegate certain things. You don't have to pick up all the supplies if you're helping with young people. And then what cannot be eliminated or delegated, and then prioritize those remaining roles and give each one a time slot. And you better put with flex, because you'll end up a nervous wreck. The thing we forget about is that we are so interested in fulfilling ourselves that we have forgotten the day of accounting. Bible says we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. For what reason? To give an accounting. You say, well, that's all theory. Until it happens, it's theory. And that's going to happen whether we believe it or not. It's going to happen whether we like it or not. It's going to happen whether we accept it or not. We will all give accounting of the time that was spent. And that's why in your devotion time, in your prayer time, your husband and wife, one of the goals you want to set here as a husband and wife is, when will you meet together for prayer in the mornings? When will you meet together to memorize the word together? When will you read together in the morning? And I think over and above family devotion, that time you and your wife can spend together in reading and prayer and so on are real big help.
Thank you for joining us for Building Great Leaders today. Dr. Les Olala speaking on directing your time. This program is a ministry of Building Great Leaders, providing instruction, encouragement, and resources for Christian leaders, and is produced by Harvest Ministries on Guam. You can learn more at bgleaders.org, bgleaders.org. Join us again for more teaching from the Word of God next time on Building Great Leaders.